plate a potential nugget.
In the book, you also use the term emotional labor at some point. I think you refer to Seth Godin, who speaks about this as well. Mm-hmm. And you actually say it takes more energy to hide parts of ourselves than to live authentically. I found that quote quite provoking. And you also say that activating our best selves with a highlight reel increases our resilience against both social stress and sickness. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah. Emotional labor is the idea of having to hide what's natural, what feelings are happening naturally. So a really crass example is if you were a flight attendant and one of the passengers grabbed you in a sexual way, they're sort of trained to hide that disgust and that dismay and to obviously be firm, but still be positive and pleasant. And that's very wearing. Now, that may be a business necessity, but it's very wearing. And that's a very harsh example. A less harsh example is if we feel like we have to hide who we are at work, you know, let's say curiosity, and just wear the mask, as some people call it. That isn't actively hiding, say, disgust, but it is in a day out basis, kind of sanding down our natural selves in order to become somebody that we're not really. And that can wear us out. You know, that causes emotional labor, causes sickness because of, you know, energy consumption. It makes us less good at our jobs. Like another example of that, by the way, and again, these are harsh examples, but it's worth putting them out there. There's a lot of research showing that stereotype threat causes people to do a lot worse. Because it, like, say you go to Stanford University and you're going to be an electronics engineer in a class, and your name is whatever, Joanne, and you're one woman in a class of 72 men. Maybe there's one other woman in there, but it's a classic. There's more people named John than there are women. That kind of thing. There's this thing called stereotype threat, where you start to become worried of how you're being judged. And that worry becomes a form of emotional labor where you have to kind of show them what you're capable of, but you're so consumed with showing them that you're not able to actually perform as well. So there's really good research on if you can make those people feel better about themselves and their strengths, if you can affirm who they are at their best, they're able to bring more of their thinking to the table because they can be less worried. They can be less anxious. And so there's study after study showing that self-affirmation allows us to overcome that stereotype threat. Now, so anyway, there's a whole lot of research on that concept. Your second question, though, takes us in a slightly different direction, and one that I think maybe I know even more about, because I'm not really a stereotype threat researcher, although I love that domain. The thing that I have been intrigued by, and again, intrigued doesn't mean that I know everything about it, but it does mean I've read an awful lot about it. Somehow, some way, when we are highlighting what we are at our best, it seems to activate this part of our brain, this ventral striatum. And in the book, I have a book called Alive at Work. I call that the seeking system, after a neuroscientist named Jak Panksepp. He called it the seeking system. There's something about highlighting our unique skills, our unique values, like what makes us unique as an individual, that seems to charge up this part of the brain and delivers a hit of dopamine, you know, which is literally like an energizing neuro. It's a chemical in our brain. It's a neurotransmitter. And that's not only energizing, meaning it's like a free drug that gives us energy. It does seem to reduce anxiety and help us deal with stress. Another way to say that is it seems to kind of tamp that down a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's really powerful and interesting. And I think important in one of the studies, and right now this is at a revise and resubmit at a journal, we found that by giving people these highlight reels and then stressing them out, they were not only more able to deal with the stress. And I can tell you a lot more about the specific study if you'd like, if you think the readers, I mean, the listeners would like to hear more. But they were not, so once you stress them out, they were not only able to perform better, be more creative, solve more problems, but they also, we had them expectorate into a cup, which is basically spit into a cup. And then we assayed that for their ability to fight disease, their immunity. And we found that it not only caused them to perform better, but it caused them to be more immune to disease. That's really powerful physical results that our body does for us when we highlight and are made aware of what we're capable of. Now, again, lots of confusion. It's not as though this is final and I'm positive that this is the way it works, but we have replicated it twice now. And there is really good evidence suggesting that something happens in our brains when we highlight what's unique and best about ourselves.
It's not an easy journey for each one of us to move towards a state where you're in flow and emotional labor seems minimal. One of my earlier guests, Professor Raj Raghunathan of UT Austin, who's a happiness researcher, speaks about three different strategies when we find ourselves in these kinds of situations.
Doing that, then I have kind of three pieces of advice, really. And this is all based off of other people's research, okay? So one is that see if you can job craft, okay? I don't know if your listeners are familiar with this term, but it's basically moving a job in a more meaningful direction, right? So, you know, I think that I'm a good candidate to speak about it because earlier we talked a little bit about this, right? Why did I end up teaching a class on happiness? I think at some level, I didn't know the word job crafting at that time, but that's what I was doing, you know? I was teaching regular marketing courses. I'm in the marketing department even to this day, but I felt a little bit uneasy about some of the larger ripple effects that the knowledge that I was imparting was having on the world at large. And so I ended up concluding that it's not as meaningful for me to do that. And so I thought to myself, what would be more meaningful is to talk about well-being, happiness, etc. So I ended up crafting, job crafting, right? So that's one thing you can do. And people are often very surprised to learn that if they do attempt to job craft, they actually do not end up facing a lot of obstacles, okay? And they end up actually getting... you know, people open up new doors of opportunity for them, even within their own firm. Okay. And it doesn't have to be massive and big, right? You could be in sales, for example, and you discover that, you know, it's really making you travel more than you want to. And you have family at home and kids and you're away from them. And in the meanwhile, you've gathered a lot of insights on what kinds of products people want. And so you could actually kind of really help out in the R&D, okay, in the new product group or innovation group. And so most people think that, well, you know, I've spent a good 15, 20 years in sales and who's going to accept me in R&D? Okay, there's no way that they're going to accept me. But you'd be surprised, you know, if you just go and talk to your boss or to other people in the R&D department, even if it's only for, you know, a temporary period, if you ask them to kind of, you know, spend time for about, say, 6 months in that R&D area, you might actually encounter a lot more receptivity than you thought. Okay, so that's one, job crafting. The second is, of course, you know, that you move jobs. And let's say that, you know, again, with this example of sales versus R&D, let's say that your company actually tells you that, no, you know, you don't have experience with that and we already have all positions full. Sorry, you can't do it, right? One thing you can do is to hang out with the R&D group, you know, even if they don't allow you to actually take up a formal position there, right? Just hang out with that group and say that, you know what, every evening I just want to spend 1 hour with you guys, you know, just to see what you're doing and just listen in. You know, I'm not going to actually work here, but I at least want to know what you're doing, right? If you take another example, okay, let's say that you are an accountant, okay, and your heart is in, say, scuba diving or something. Okay, just go spend time at a scuba diving shop, okay, and volunteer your time and find out what it takes to kind of own a scuba diving shop and go on more scuba diving trips, okay? The idea is that you end up kind of building a set of what might be called tacit knowledge, you know, not formal knowledge, but knowledge that's kind of maybe implicit, difficult to kind of articulate in words, but you end up discovering, you know, the community that's into that. You end up discovering what aspects of the job that you thought you'd really like, you actually end up hating. Okay, maybe you don't like the idea of, you know, filling up tanks every evening. Okay, and you thought that that somehow wasn't part of the job of owning a scuba diving shop. So that's the idea that, you know, over time, spending 2, 3, 4, 5 years, even sometimes in that area that you thought might be more fulfilling for you, will end up kind of revealing to you whether it actually is something that would be fulfilling or it was just one of your aspirational dreams, right? And what this lady Herminia Ibarra has discovered in her book, Working Identity, is that people who take that path of slowly kind of branching out rather than taking this discontinuous jump from what you're doing to what you think might be your passion is a much, much more stable way to transition out of the job that you find meaningless to a job that you find more meaningful. What's happening in those 3, 4, 5 years is that even though it sounds like a long time, you're actually, you know, you're on a journey there, right? You're on a journey mm-hmm. away from your currently meaningless job towards a job that's going to be more meaningful, but it's not something that a journey that requires you to abandon all your present contacts and your family and put them, you know, in jeopardy by doing that. You're taking everybody along for the ride a little bit and you're communicating with them on what's going on. And that's a much better path to take. The slow and organic path, I call it. And the third thing that you can do, sorry, did you want to say something?
No, I just wanted to say that I'm a big fan of Herminia Ibarra and she was on the podcast a while back as well. So completely.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Okay.
Beyond that.
Okay. All right. So, and the last one is really, you know, let's say that both of these paths are not available to you, right? I mean, the job crafting, you can't do it. And you really can't kind of afford to, you know, spend any more time pursuing what you think might be a second career, volunteering for a scuba diving shop, for example, then, you know, at least, the very least, pick up a hobby that's intrinsically motivating for you, okay? Maybe it is solving jigsaw puzzles, right? Maybe it's learning about, I don't know, Greek history, okay? Nowadays, we have access to so many different resources, right, on the internet that I think it would be a shame if we didn't pursue our hobbies. And it turns out, there's lots of work on this, that if you, even if you have a job in which you're not into it, it's not meaningful, but you have a set of hobbies that you're into and it's highly meaningful for you, deeply satisfying, that's going to overflow into affecting your job satisfaction. So that's the very least that we can do, I would say.
These are not easy topics to navigate. And I realize it's a messy journey, figuring out these things. Recognizing that leading an authentic life and minimizing emotional labor to the extent possible is a problem to be solved, is often half the battle won. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.